All right, welcome into the latest edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. We're here still. We have not been shut down yet.
We're a month in now.
We are a month in. You know,
through September.
I mean, hey, every time we're allowed to come back into this little room and break the microphones out and nobody comes in and says, hey, you guys can just stop doing that. It's good for us, I feel.
Hey, Burl's hooking us up, man.
He's hooking us up. He believes in us, and we believe in him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's, you know, it's hard to believe this, but we're like a month away from elections here.
We are 5 weeks from 5 weeks from today as we record this here on Tuesday,
which is wild, because there's a whole. This is going to be a huge. It's like everybody always says this is the most important election, but this one is going to be massive. It's hard to believe that it's already here. Although anybody that's been watching TV and seen commercials knows that. I guess.
Well, it's the first big election, first midterm since Trump was elected, and you know, I think a lot of, you know, right now the attention is on this Kavanaugh thing and how is that going to influence the election? You know, if he gets confirmed, is the backlash going to be a blue wave? If he doesn't, is the backlash going to be a red wave or whatever they call it? So it's a interesting line that I think both parties are walking right now with that, and it'll be interesting to see how that could impact some of the closer races, you know, back here in Ohio. Particularly, I'm thinking about the governor's race, where you have two guys who are, you know, DeWine and Cordray, who are neck and neck and in the polls and close, and both, you know, haven't really separated themselves. I think Scott Wortman wrote the other day that this might be the nerdiest race in the country, and they're both, you know, they're both studious policy wonks, and neither one of them are like super excitable, but that's not really necessarily a criticism. And so, you know, how is something like that, potentially the Kavanaugh thing, how that plays out? Could that have an impact on a tight race like the governor's race here in Ohio?
Let me ask you this as a everyday, please help me understand this better guy. What will be the local impact on the governor's race here? Like, what would be the biggest thing if it flips one way or the other, or maybe an issue, or is there something that's really on the line for Cincinnatians locally with this race? Are they too far away really to have more that much of an impact?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, from a standpoint of you know, healthcare is such a big issue in the race. You know, nothing maybe Cincinnati specific, but certainly bigger overall policy types of things that will certainly impact greater Cincinnatians. You know, you have Cordray talking about reinstalling this local government fund that Kasich cut back in 2011, essentially, where local counties and jurisdictions and cities, you know, don't get as much money as they used to from the state of Ohio. And so Cordray has said he's going to give some of that money back. The state's sitting on a $2 billion rainy day fund, which the Democrats have talked about that being built up on the backs of the local government funds, so you know, certainly from a standpoint like that, if you know the city of Cincinnati or Hamilton County, which is really in a penny pinching situation, if they're able to get some money back, I think that certainly could impact some lives here, and we could see, you know, maybe, you know, you wouldn't be getting some of these tax levies or your taxes raised. So from that standpoint, yeah, I think this could be a big race in that way.
Yeah, it's always really interesting. I always wonder if something like the governor is just too far away to really see the like regular everyday impact. Whereas, you know, a local race, I mean, whether you're talking about, you know, mayor or council or whatever, I mean, that's stuff that you will see an immediate impact. Things will change. Projects will happen. Projects will be shut down. Right? You see that governor. I always wonder if that's because there's so much other stuff going on, how much that really does show up here.
Well, it's interesting because I was just talking to a Republican, a guy who used to be an advisor to Kasich several years ago. Now he's a political consultant, and we had coffee recently, and we were talking about how Cincinnati sort of feels like it's out here on an island by itself in the state of Ohio, and how the rest of the state of Ohio looks at us as being on an island. And so I think it is hard to get, you know, he was talking about how it's really hard to get people interested, and I think he's talking about the media, donors interested in a lot of these statewide races and issues. And I didn't necessarily disagree with him. I mean, we're talking anecdotally, but we have taken a look at some of the data, and some of the Republican money here for statewide races, it appears as if it's a little bit down this year. Now, do we know the reason for that yet? No, not necessarily. Maybe donors are just fatigued and they're burned out from all the craziness in politics in the last few years. But it's certainly, from our general standpoint here in Cincinnati, when we look at Columbus and vice versa, it's hard for us to get excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially because neither candidate are from here. The closest would be Mike DeWine, whose son Pat DeWine is Supreme Court Justice, who lives here in Cincinnati and is a former city councilman. And Mike DeWine lives in the Xenia Cedarville area in Greene County, so not too far away. But yeah, it's tough, and when you don't have like super excitable candidates either,
yeah,
that makes it, I think, even more tough for a place like Cincinnati to get really fired up about it.
Yeah. So beyond that, so the governor's race is a nerdery. It's a nerd off. Is that what we're basically? Yeah.
Nerdery.
That's great. You know, very, very good for them. as far as we get into local stuff, obviously the AFTAB stuff is still here, and I don't want this to become the AFTAB show.
No.
Where we're talking about that every week. There is still
it is. I mean, the thing is from now until Election Day, it is, in terms of here in Cincinnati, it is our most watched, most interesting race. Is AFTAB Puraval and Steve Shabbat in the first congressional district.
You were tweeting. Can I ask you about a tweet you had? You had a tweet about Shabbat and Western and the Viaduct.
Yeah. Right?
So it's been sort of a, this has been the thing. I mean, I get nervous every time I even go near the damn thing. But I mean, how much is he able to control? Because they're starting to gain more money, right, towards it. How much does he control the ability to put that project over the top?
Not a whole lot. Particularly in these days. I mean, this is my personal opinion as a columnist that, you know, I share this, and that I personally, I believe that my opinion is that he could do more to champion it. Especially now when you've seen the locals get interested in it, City Hall, the commissioners, the state to some extent. And now you really need that federal piece. The Trump administration gave $5 million to the project back in the summer. So I think it really
Need like 300.
Yeah, it needs 335 million. So that's a drop in the bucket.
I saw they're up to 94, right? Did I see that?
Yeah, it's around 100. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But I feel like Shabbat could do more and should do more and should really. I mean, because of the fact that that's a main commuter route for where his neighborhood, Westwood.
Yeah.
It is a major commuter route for the west side of Cincinnati where he lives. And the problem now is that he didn't do a lot for it when there were earmarks. And now that federal earmarks have been banned, that makes it even harder for him to bring money home for it. But, you know, that doesn't mean you can't be a champion for it and go in there and try. And I think there's a lot of questions out there about whether he's really fully locked in and tried to do everything he can for it.
That's got to be the biggest. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of transportation issues here, but I mean infrastructure. That's the biggest. I guess that and the bridge. Yeah. I mean, those are the biggest issues that are going here right now, right?
Yeah, to me, though, in the Western Hills Viaduct is the, and when I cover transportation, it's the most heavily traveled, decrepit bridge in the entire region, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one that I think can get done and get done first because you don't have the two states involved with Brent Spence.
Right.
You've got Kentucky, Ohio, the federal government. You got a lot of environmental issues going on there. So you've got tons of federal agencies involved in that. You got the Ohio River with the environmental stuff and natural resources types of things. So that involves a lot of bureaucracy. Whereas the Western Hills Viaduct is a county-owned bridge run by the city. So the city and the county are, for the most part, on the same page with it, for the most part. They've at least started to make it a priority. Need some federal money. The state has started to put money into it. And so, you know, there's not two states involved here trying to get that done. It's a very important piece of infrastructure. There's 55,000 cars a day that travel it. Other than really the Brent Spence Bridge, there's not a more heavily traveled bridge. Let me take that back. There's not a more heavily traveled, like, local bridge, non-Ohio River bridge in the region. So, yeah.
What are the odds that something would actually start getting done on that in the next, let me say, 5 years?
I've thought, from talking to folks, they see it as more of a 10-year thing.
Yeah.
Which I had talked to an engineer, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and he thought it wouldn't get done for 10 years. So maybe we are now starting to get into that 5-year range where work will get started. I don't know how long it would take to get it done. It's a very complex project. It's over the Queensgate rail yard. And so that also complicates it. The railroad companies are always very challenging to deal with when you're impacting their right-of-way because they want to bring trains in and out of there whenever they want them, whenever they want to, and they don't want anybody in their way. So that's a tough thing. I don't know how long it would take. You got to build pillars over top of railroad tracks, and so, you know, the stop and go of trying to let trains through and figure all that out, it's got to be really complex. I'm not sure how long, but from a political standpoint, you know, there's a little bit of momentum for it now. And however, it's also not a, it's, it, here's the problem with, from a political standpoint, here's the problem with that bridge. It doesn't really, you know, it's not a freight route. It doesn't really connect directly to neighborhoods or, I mean, literally it's a big, ugly bridge over a bunch of railroad tracks in the Mill Creek. And so, you know, it's not a critical piece of infrastructure for, you know, national trade like the Brent Spence Bridge is. So the politicians are like, oh, they can't really champion that it's a big economic development project. But when it comes to getting people to jobs, which is economic development, you know, that is a critical piece of infrastructure. The problem is it's going to take so long. And politicians, I think we talked about this on a recent episode, politicians want quick wins they can cut ribbons on and say, look what I got done for you. And something like, you know, fixing the Sorta bus system or the Western Hills Viaduct are long-term deals where, you know, you might plant the seed now if you're John Cranley or Todd Portune, but you're going to be long out of office by the time that thing's done.
Yeah. Is it going to fall over soon? Like, how decrepit? You use the word decrepit. I mean, how decrepit
that
is
was
it?
Just my
is that? But is that, like, is that what the biggest, the nervous aspect of this is? Is, like, it's going to be like the bridge above, you know, one day it's just going to all of a sudden it's just going to go down in a part or something's going to happen? I mean, is that a possibility?
Well, it's under, it's basically being babysat by the federal government. So it reached a level where it was, there's so many different bureaucratic terms for how bad a shape a bridge is in. I don't even want to get into all of them. But it reached a point in, I think it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, where So the city inspects it every year, but now the federal government requires an additional inspection. I believe that's once every year and a half or every 2 years. So in addition to the city's inspection, there's also the federal government requires a separate inspection. Mm-hmm. You know, and they always assure that it's safe to drive on, but you know, we've seen it shut down in the last few years for chunks falling off of it. And I took a tour of it, you know, in, I don't know, it's probably 3 years ago now, 4 years ago. But you, if you walk underneath it, I'll never forget this in my whole time, you know, covering transportation, is that when the engineer took me underneath the bridge and, you know, he's showing me the pillars down by the rail yard, I literally touched a, pier or a pillar, one of the vertical things that helps hold the bridge up. Yeah. I touched it and literally concrete just crumbled off of it. Like it was like, I was just pushing a paper plate. Like,
wow.
I mean, it was just brittle.
Yeah.
Paper plate's not the right, but it was just super brittle. I literally touched it with my index finger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it fell off like just loose rocks.
That's incredible.
I mean, yeah, that is like the facade of it, and so the beams underneath are the problem. Is that the beams underneath have started to rust, so they've had to do things to try to resolve that. And it's just, you're putting band-aids on it, and it's, the thing was built in 1932, and it's time to be replaced.
Yeah. Well, at some point, if something serious did happen there, there would be a whole lot of people who would be responsible for not having acted fast enough, that's for sure.
Hey, look, I mean, you know, half the population of the city of Cincinnati lives, you know, on the west side. Now, that's a vast, broad stroke of neighborhoods and areas. But, you know, politicians have talked for years about, you know, we want to help the west side, want to help the west side. Well, you know, it's time to step up and fix this bridge, because few things are more critical to the west side of Cincinnati than this bridge that carries 55,000 cars, which, you know, you think if there's, you know, some of those cars have more than one person in them, that's a lot of people's lives that are impacted by that.
But everybody wants something fresh and new.
Exactly.
And shiny and a new area, and we want the new OTR and all that stuff, and put all that, well, sometimes.
You're trying to bait me now. You're trying to get me started. I know what you're trying to do. I can see it. I see it coming down the tracks.
I know. It is.
I see it coming down the tracks.
I'm just saying. You're a core guy. You don't like everybody trying to throw the shiny quick wins. You don't like that stuff.
I mean, I love all that stuff. Like, I love new stadiums. I love I don't think
you love streetcars.
I think streetcars are not good policy. I think we've established that very well by now. My thing is just be practical about it, you know, and I actually, you know, I'll get pushback from Democrats and Republicans on this. This has nothing to do. This isn't about me and this is about me being, you know, a watchdog journalist and, you know, holding public officials accountable and, you know, that they should be doing the right things with money. And in this day and age of very scarce infrastructure money, when you look at something like the Western Hills Viaduct, that needs to be addressed long before we're dealing with, you know, building streetcars that very few people ride and have really no transportation value, but yet are taking valuable transportation dollars. And not just that, but energy and, you know, taking air out of the room at City Hall and wherever in the government. And, you know, And it's just diverting attention from the things that really need to be addressed.
Yep. Oh, that was kind of like a little old man moment right there. I like that.
Old man yells at cloud. Blah, blah, blah.
You all want your new shiny things when you're not thinking about the roads and
the
bridges.
I'm all for new shiny things as long as you're addressing the really critical things that happen first. And I think one of those critical things that need to be addressed also is the bus system. It's been proven by study after study, independent study even, that it is terrible at getting people to jobs, and that it's been proven that part of fighting poverty and getting people to jobs is public transportation. And that's real public transportation. When you're talking about, you know, I've gotten on this soapbox before on this show, but, you know, it's so important to getting people to jobs and helping them get out of some tough situations in life. And those are the kinds of things that we need to be focused on and addressing.
And that is nowhere near as expensive as the $300+ million that you would talk about needing for something like the viaduct or a lot of, the 130 plus million that you use for the streetcar or whatever. Right. I mean,
it could be more expensive. It depends on what
the solution is.
Yeah. And over time and how much it's going to cost over time and what's decided and how many new bus routes they want. And they've got to figure that out. I mean, it's time to figure it out. I thought they were close to, you know, getting that figured out. They being the city and county and sort of, but politics got in the way. And so now we're in a sort of a holding pattern.
We love those. All right. Let's move on. Interview segment time. So we're going to bring in our good friend, Carol Motzinger. Motzi is great. We're going to bring her in. She had a great story on the lions at the zoo, actually. So some zoo talk. I love zoo talk. You love zoo talk.
I know you like zoo talk.
Yeah, I do like zoo talk. Let's bring in Carol. It's interview time in the SF Cincinnati, and that means we find some of our friends. Sometimes people from outside in the community. Sometimes we just go through the newsroom and we pick people off, and that's what we've done today. But you, there's a good reason, Carol Motzinger. I'm super excited about this because the zoo, I don't know that people realize about, like, you go to the zoo and there's animals and good times, everyone's so happy, but I don't think people realize how rare some of the animals are. And the story you had on the lions was just crazy.
Well, first off, I want to say you guys just call me friend. So
yeah.
I just want to take a moment to let that sink in.
Yeah.
Not that you just saw me standing around.
No, you're one
on my computer, and I was just easy to snag and a sucker because I love you guys and thank you for having me on the show.
Of course.
Big fan already.
Big fan.
Big fan already.
First time, long time.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up about the zoo. I mean, because it is fun. You can just go and spend a day there and enjoy it without thinking twice about how historic and important and innovative this cultural institution is. And the white lions are certainly a part of that story.
Great 80s band, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
How did you come across
back in the day?
How did you come across that story, by the way? Like, is that just one that you wanted to do, or you were just like, we've got to do something on this, or did you find out about it? How did that even come about?
Well, a couple things. There's signage outside of the exhibit. I'm one of those who reads. I identify as a reader.
Yeah.
and so I had no, and I'm a fan of the zoo anyway, you know, and so I had seen the signage outside of it about them being donated by Siegfried and Roy, which kind of made me stop a little bit already, you know, because when's the last time y'all thought about both Siegfried and Roy?
Whenever the last one got, when the one got eaten, right?
Yeah.
That's like when I thought about
them. Siegfried or Roy that got eaten?
Things I know now, that was Roy.
That was Roy?
It was Roy. Things I know now.
It wasn't these lions, was it?
No, although I don't know if
you guys...
Are
they related?
So Prosperity, who is our mother lion,
yes,
our lioness, she is actually from their Las Vegas compound. So, and the fact that, like you said, these animals are so rare, the idea that they are not related, I couldn't say 100%. I couldn't print it, but I would believe that they must have been because there's not very many of them in the entire world. So
how many are there? Didn't you...
The estimate is actually 300, but no one knows exactly how many. And the sad part, and I feel okay saying this, is that most of those lions are not in the wild, nor are they in zoos or sanctuaries. They're actually in illegal hunting operations.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So people are breeding them to essentially release them just for a few minutes so that people can shoot them. And it's illegal, you know, so it's...
they're an endangered species.
So what's interesting is that they're not their own species. So to be a white lion, it's basically a product of your parents both having your lion parents both having the recessive gene. It's sort of like how... to like a brown-eyed couple can have a blue-eyed baby, you know? And so there are a lot of tawny lions, which is also things I've learned. It's like the blonder lion that they can have, you know, they can have a all white lion. Yeah. So that's
who knew there were other animals at the zoo besides that hippo.
I personally now look,
curmudgeon moment.
I just can't.
Do you guys have a sound effect for that yet?
I can't get White Lion the band out of my head right now. My seventh grade dance.
I'll say this: when we go to the zoo, mm-hmm. we specifically don't go near Fiona and that whole thing because you almost get the whole zoo mm-hmm. to yourself anymore.
Yeah.
If you go early enough, like at the right time. You can go and it is awesome. So I will say one thing. So we went this past weekend, myself, my wife, my daughter, and they had the new gorilla exhibit, you know, RIP, obviously.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the new gorilla exhibit that they have done there is phenomenal. So these two, like, little baby gorillas come over and are playing, and they go right up against the glass, and there's a bunch of us in there. Like almost face to face with this other kid, then the other little baby girl like climbs on top of him, and they're playing, and they're both now up against the glass, and then falls back, and like, this is all happening right in front of all these kids. My daughter, scared to death, by the way, of this whole situation,
no.
started just like crying, just like, no, this is, I'm uncomfortable with this. But it's like that. I just was blown away by that. Like, there's, if you just spend more time poking around and not being virally obsessed with Fiona, I think you come across a whole lot of much cooler stuff that you can see there.
Well, and that's what I kind of hope the White Lions story did, is, you know, part of the point of us doing it now is that, you know, we're pretty sure they're the oldest of their kind, and they're in great health, you know, but at a certain point, you know, they have already, both of them have already outlived the expected the life expectancy for a lion in human care.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was exactly that sort of thing of like, here's maybe a story that you don't know about the zoo and these animals that did get a lot of attention 20 years ago when you had, I kid you not, our buddy Roy in the exhibit for 15 minutes with these lions, by the way, at the Cincinnati Zoo.
See, it was a risky yes. move then, and it eventually, he's all right, isn't he?
Yeah, he's alive.
I was like, do I need to do a quick Google search and edit?
No, he's
still like bleach blonde his hair and stuff. Like,
that's the other one. Again, things I know now.
You're learning so much,
you know,
the lion world, and that
was so cool, was that, you know, and that's what I love about our jobs, right? Is that like you can kind of tell that these are special animals, right? You know, you look at them and you can tell they're different. You know, they're, I personally think lions are just beautiful, majestic animals. I mean, Simba, what?
Sure, a very popular lion.
Yeah, super hot.
In the lion world, for sure.
But you know what I mean? Like, they're beautiful animals anyway. And so, like, the white lion is like, you can tell there's something special. And then from getting to do this job, I got to spend time to kind of figure out why. And, you know, and that's pretty cool. We get to do that, right? Sometimes?
Very cool.
You don't write about anything fun, but I do, so I enjoy it.
I know, and when something fun does happen, I'm like an old curmudgeon about it. I'm like,
you're writing something else
instead of the hippo.
That's very true. So, I love it. Yeah, you managed to still take it down.
You've done great work, like your Harambe piece. What was that? Is that a couple years ago now, right?
I did the anniversary story on the Harambe piece.
That was 2 years. Wait, that happened 3 years ago, right?
I have no idea even how old I am. So it's 2014, right?
Yeah.
Right now?
I don't know.
No, that was...
Was Harambe 2015?
Harambe was 2015.
So then you wrote the anniversary piece in
2016. Yeah,
so that was
2 years
ago. Yeah, that was a great piece.
Thank you.
Great design. That was fascinating. Like, what the cult of Harambe and how that whole thing took
off. Yeah, the strange second life that he ended up having. On the internet.
Yes.
That was, I love doing that story too. It was also very fascinating, but there's some deep, dark corners.
Yeah, there really are.
Sure, in those tubes.
I will say the one thing about Fiona, how the zoo was able to flip the narrative for themselves on the internet and marketing and socially and all that stuff with the Fiona thing is pretty remarkable, because it felt like they were going to be covered in the Harambe thing forever.
And then really quickly
to have that happen, to this thing to happen, it sort of was like, man, what an they went from one side of the spectrum to the other. Because
what do you mean? It was just organic.
Just very organic, yeah. You know?
I mean, I will tell you, even just from tweeting out this story, you know, and having some conversations with folks online this past week, like, I got a lot of, like, well, Harambe would have liked a white lion response.
He would have loved this.
Yeah, he would have loved it, you know, so it's still out there.
Oh, no, it's definitely not gone away.
Yeah, but, you know, the life cycle of things online in that way. I mean, this and that was part of, you know, my kind of point with that our anniversary story was that it outlasted so many other things and kind of trying to unlock why. What were the factors that made it have this staying power, and still we're finding it today and even our own responses to our work. But it's weird, man.
And the zoo is like now trying to build like a mother mega complex or whatever, aren't they? Like trying to like yeah. We want more.
Yeah. They're planning a you know, really massive expansion. You know, it's been anchored by $50 million
benefactor.
Yeah. I wrote this story, but
yeah,
it was
this.
Many sleeps ago.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that I was going to be quiz. I think.
Oh, I don't know. I just thought about it because I remember that being the other news with the zoo. They're trying to build all this new stuff, right?
Yeah, so they're trying to, you know, the main thing will be a larger elephant enclosure, a bigger parking lot, you know, better view, like visitors experience, more ramps, you know, things like that, just to make it easier to get around, and then also some exhibit improvements.
Yeah. Well, I will say if they have exhibit improvements, sort of like they did at the gorilla one, then it's pretty cool because that really is a really cool thing that they built on over there,
and
to really get up close.
Yeah, and the family that jump-started this larger campaign, they also were very instrumental in getting the enclosure for the gorillas. So you have them to thank. So
well, thank you. Maybe one day my daughter won't be totally frightened by it, and actually will think it's great. I'm sure that day's in the future. But the concept of this thing, and we don't even know what glass is, so I'm just really unsure. And then we later on walked by. They were taking like the donkeys for a walk. That didn't go over well. Like, the zoo was just way too real for my daughter this past weekend. Way too real. She was not ready for it. So, but thanks to all the people at the zoo. They do great work over there, and a great story in the lions, which was very cool to read. So hopefully
thanks.
Everybody, if you haven't read it yet, go over to Cincinnati.com. You know where to go. Go check it all out. Carol's story is up there.
Hey,
thanks,
you know
Carol.
You know what the Cincinnati Zoo is?
Oh, no.
What is the Cincinnati Zoo?
That's so Cincinnati.
You did so Cincinnati of us to have Carol on to talk about the zoo.
Could the audience hear my eye roll? Do you think that did the mic pick up the eye roll?
No, they do their own every time we do this joke. We're in episode 5 now.
Are we that far along?
I think so.
Feels like 50.
We continue to do this.
Did you guys watch The Muppets?
Yeah.
You're just two old men.
Oh, come on now. Come on now.
You're looking at me and you're thinking, yeah. Oh, you're like both of them.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I was trying to say. No, I love them. They're the best.
Oh, yeah. Don't turn it now.
Oh, come on.
All right.
No, well, thank you for having me.
Of course.
Yeah.
We'll have you back again. Maybe talk about dope art or something.
Oh, yeah. I do that sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Not personally. I just talk about other people being good at art.
Yeah. We'll do that. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Motsy.
All right. Much thanks to Carol for joining us, and good zoo talk.
Was I love hearing about
the zoo.
I do love the zoo. I know I was being a little bit of a curmudgeon.
Yeah,
but I do love the zoo. It's a great asset to our community, and it's one of the best in the world. And it's we have it right here.
And you should go there for things besides Fiona.
Agreed.
What's funny, like, you see the amount of like. Just the flood of people. It's all you ever hear. People coming, are we going to go see Fiona?
Yeah.
It's just they've created this mad thing. And on the actual announcements, when you're like going up the elevator to go in or whatever, it says, welcome to the Cincinnati Zoo, home of Fiona the Hippo. And it's like, that's it. That is summing up the zoo. They like, well, we've got to, all we need to say is we're the zoo and we have Fiona.
Hey, we got white lions too.
And white lions, but
biting rhinos.
But, dude, yeah, that's not good. They don't need any more. Like they got this good run going on.
Yeah. No more negativity.
You don't need to be in the news for your animals. Like an encounter, it's a little too close of an encounter.
Yeah, it is.
Like I said, I mean, Maybe my daughter had the right instincts.
Maybe she did.
We were by the rhinos on Saturday, and she didn't like that either.
But they didn't bother you?
Well, you know what's funny, and I don't know where this happened, so I don't know anything. I actually don't know much about the rhino bite story, but I do know that the setup of the rhino area, like, you get really
it's
close,
open,
and it
yeah.
feels like there's not as much protection as you expect, considering yeah. it's a rhino, yes. right? So I could see a rhino coming up, and if somebody reached over or something, which why would you?
I mean.
I never understand people reaching out to animals that are, like, clearly fenced off.
Now, do you tell your daughter, like, your mom and dad, did they tell you this? Like, well, you know, if you don't bother them, they won't bother you. Like bumblebees. I remember hearing, like,
yeah.
growing up, or snakes or, like, whatever. It's like, I wonder if that's the same thing with rhinos.
I don't think so. When I look at a rhino, I do not think that. And then they're like, if I just don't bother this thing, if I just sit here, it won't. Like, I think it eventually would say, all right, I'll eat you.
It's like you could just, or if you could, is it just like a bear thing? You just lay down and play dead and that rhino won't bother you?
Dude, I don't know. Or just stomp on you.
Anyway.
I don't know. I don't know enough about rhino eating habits, but I can say I probably would just go ahead and exit the premises.
Yeah.
All right, time for our That's So Cincinnati moments of the week.
Woohoo!
Woo!
It's brought to you by Cincinnati.com.
Cincinnati.com!
Log on and love it.
Oh, you love that. You're a big fan.
I'm just doing what the marketing department's telling me. No, I'm kidding.
We are the marketing department.
We are
the marketing department. We're here to market ourselves. We got you. I got my That's Cincinnati moment of the week. So
wait.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Let me clear my throat.
My That's a Cincinnati moment of the week. Thank you for that wonderful drum roll. Where I live over in Oakley, they have the whole Oakley Station complex. It was very popular when people were writing about the FC Cincinnati Stadium mm-hmm. situation, because that was going to go onto the back end of Oakley Station. Anyway, clearly at some point, some survey was taken of that area of town, and it was, there is a need for more workout places. There's like an LA Fitness there that is just packed all the time, right? And obviously, at some point, someone was told or some survey was distributed, say, there's a lack of these here in this place. And somehow, nobody got together to tell them to not all build one inside of this same complex, because there are now going to be not one, not two, not three, not four, whoa, but five workout places.
Woo-hoo!
All within one small area. There's like a Planet Fitness. There's a Crunch Fitness. You've got the LA Fitness. I think there's an Orange Theory going in. It's like any single workout place. You don't all need to be here. It was like the other thing they said, they must have said also, you know what else they feel like they need? They do not feel like they have enough, like, quick chicken places. So what went up? Chick-fil-A goes up. And Raising Cane's went up. And
oh,
then
man,
and then the Wings and Rings went up. And it's like, we can diversify. Like, is someone not telling them look, we've taken care of the chicken issue. We've taken care of the workout issue. And let's try to, like, maybe put some other stuff in here. It's obviously a very popular area. I mean,
yeah.
Hell.
And you got Popeyes right up the street there at
Popeyes is
near Rookwood.
Yeah, it's much farther up the street. No,
yeah,
not
but it's still in the area.
It's in the area. But this is all right in
Oakley
Station together.
Yeah,
I mean, one right across from the other.
And you got Kroger Deli. They have great chicken there, too.
You got Kroger. I mean, there is a lot. There's a lot happening, so I get it. I mean, there's a lot of everything. But the amount of workout places all currently being built and now competing for everyone's dollar.
And chicken places,
you know, as you might have expected, Chick-fil-A is beating the living crap out of Raising Cane's. Except on
I
Sundays.
Love them both, so I'm
Chick-fil-A is way better than
I mean, I but they're different. I mean, Raising Cane's is all chicken fingers and they're good.
It's
try
just
it
different
sometime.
Shapes. It's not really that different.
One
tastes way better.
Well, I guess I just get different. I get grilled nuggets at Chick-fil-A, and I get, of course, chicken fingers at Raising Cane's because that's all you can get there. And yeah, you get, like, fries and Texas.
Well, I can tell you this, is that there are not often people at Raising Cane's, and there is always.
That's too bad. You're missing out, folks.
I know. You just don't want to see it go away in case you ever come.
Well, I like competition.
And they just built a Wingstop right next to it. I forgot about that. That just opened right next to Magic.
They're cannibalizing themselves.
They are. I don't know why you would think that this is the time to come in with your wings and your workouts.
Oh, wait. So what is
that? Why? I feel like that as a, I feel like somehow people looked at like myself and other people that live in the community, and they just boiled us down to a couple things. Like, all you people do is work out and eat chicken. That's what I feel like was basically said. Which I'm all for the I do one of those
chicken
two.
Restaurants. I could care less about the gym thing.
Me too.
You can see. Thank goodness we're not on video.
People would be like, we know. We're well aware you guys don't care about the workout stuff.
You do.
I don't know. I always here's what I do. Every single year when the Bengals season ends, this is the off season. I'm going to get it together. And it always fits right in there with that New Year's resolution time. Like, season ends, obviously, the first week in January for the Bengals every year. And so I'm always sitting there and I'm like, all right, this is the time. I'm going to figure out how to do this and really make – I'm going to change my lifestyle. I'm going to start working out regularly. And I just never – I never quite get that thing going. But this is the year because I'm going to have so many options.
You are. That's right.
I'm actually excited about it because also in the complex they're building a they're putting a daycare in.
Ooh,
which I have said this, and I will walk outside of this room right now and yell into the newsroom. When is someone going to write the daycare story in Cincinnati? Because there is an insane shortage of daycare places inside the I-275 belt. Like, they're an insane shortage. There are waiting lists at most of these places where if you don't have a sibling already in or something, like, it's impossible to get in because there's so few. The supply and demand on it is so out of whack. So they're building this new one in Oakley Station. Thank God.
That's great.
It's going to be which is right by the house. But there's, like, there's hardly anything. I felt lucky because it's not going to open until January, and I think we just got in under where I think we're going to get in there. Going in 5 months before it's even a thing.
Wow.
So, but it's crazy. We had to go to a place downtown. Crazy. There aren't hardly any. They're already super expensive as it is, and it only allows them to jack the prices up more. It's really interesting how those don't really exist much inside the city.
Man, we're blessed. Like, my mother-in-law and father-in-law are right up the street from us. And
that is lucky.
They are more than gracious to watch our two-year-old, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, it's a huge thing to have. All right, do you have a That's a Cincinnati moment?
I do. This could be a That's a Cincinnati moment, not necessarily of the week, but of the minute, because this has always been a Cincinnati thing. And the reason why I'm bringing it up this week, well, I'll just go ahead and say it, and then I'll tell you why I'm talking about it. But my So Cincinnati moment of the week is, what's up with everybody always asking about what high school you went to around here?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a whole other show. That's been other shows. It's been stories. It's been talked about. It's a very Cincinnati thing. The only reason why I bring it up is because I'm coming off my 25th high school reunion. I'm not from Cincinnati. So where I'm from, people don't really ask you where, I don't even know if they even care if you went to school or not where I'm from, Southeast Ohio. So. But we had an epic time, 25th anniversary of Gallia Academy High School, class of 93 over the weekend.
Class of 93 in the house.
Yeah, man, I tell you, man, we acted like it was our high school graduation party and not our 25th year reunion.
How often do you get back there?
I've been getting back actually fairly decent amount here recently because I go to Marshall games and that's obviously in that region, and it's just a fun place to go. Like, my parents live on a farm and they got a Polaris and four-wheeler and tractors and cows and all that fun stuff. So my kids love it. Wife's cool. We've got a pool, and so they're like, come on out. And
That is a good setup. Can I go next time?
Sure.
Let's go.
My parents are getting ready to, I think they're getting ready to sell the place and move south. So it's going to happen soon. Yeah.
It sounds like Xanadu.
Let me tell you, though. It was just, I was just reminded of how much I love my high school friends. There's some of them I have literally not seen since high school graduation, but to see Christina and Nicole and Adam and Hoffman and Jared and Chuck and Nathan.
Are you shouting them all out? Do they listen?
I don't know if they do or not. Like,
did you promise them like many Shana drinks in that Carrie, you would shout them all out on this podcast that you're on now? You're like, hey, Billy, guys, let me tell you about this great podcast I'm on now. I will totally Hager, make you all famous when I shout them all. I'll shout all of you out.
Katie. There's like 150 of us, or 150 in my class.
Because I don't know how much more time we have left for you to continue to run through
your
entire
high
school class.
But I love all of them. Heather.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever's coming to mind. So
yeah, I like
it. I'm sorry. I can't give everyone a shout out.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
It's just fun to be back and see them. Because, you know, I know a lot of people probably in this. I think I thought of this. You know, in the Facebook era, it's like, oh, you get a tendency to think like, oh, I don't really, I see that person all the time on Facebook. But I was thinking about this after we all hung out on Saturday that I'm like, there's nothing like getting together. Like Facebook does none of this, you know. Yeah, it's great to keep up with people's lives and what their kids and spouses are up to and what, you know, just where they're going on trips and everything. But there's nothing that beats that interaction with them and hanging out and drinking a beer and talking and reminiscing, and you know, so it was just great.
That's why the future of our country is doomed, Jason. People don't hang out anymore.
I know it is. Yeah.
I mean, I hate to end it on a downer like that.
Anyway,
you had a really good fun story, but I was like, all I hear about when you say that is I think about like, you're right. People don't just hang out anymore.
No, they don't.
You gotta hang out.
You really do. Oh, Too Tall Teddy. That's one. I forgot to give her a shout out.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, including everybody, all your friends back in.
Well, most of them live in, like, Columbus or some in Gallipolis now.
Gallipolis. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. We'll be back next Wednesday, of course. We're here for you every single Wednesday, and hopefully if you listen to this, if you like it, tell your friends. Please comment in the comment section. Send us tweets on Twitter at Jason Williams, right? J or is there what
at J Williams Cincy?
J Williams Cincy. That's
right. Got to give shout out to my good buddy Larry Howe too.
You can hit me at Paul Dater Jr. If you have any comments or suggestions, and subscribe, please subscribe. And so the podcast will come to you every single week, and you can listen to our great conversation and see who's going to get shout out next week. Anybody else?
Jeff Pope.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Later.